Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for August 20th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Very exciting episode we have for you tonight. We're going to talk all about the All-In show that is setting records as we speak, taking place next Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern, here in the United States, on the East Coast of the United States anyway, taking place from Wembley Stadium. As of last report, one day ago, WrestleTix on Twitter had this at 80,846 tickets out. So this is, say what you will about AEW, but there is a lot of appetite for this show live. So very exciting to have a show of this caliber, of this magnitude, coming to pay-per-view. And next Sunday, we will be going on the air right after that show goes off the air. So as soon as All In ends, you can tune in to Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Want to hear your thoughts on the show? 515-605-9345. If you can't call in, WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails. So you can do that for next week's show. You can do that for tonight's show as we do a full preview of All In. Time permitting, we'll also talk about All Out, which is coming up the following week from Chicago, as well as WWE's Payback, which we only have one match on that show announced, Becky Lynch versus Trish Stratus in a steel cage. All Out in Chicago so far has Luchasaurus versus Darby Allin for the TNT title, and Miro versus Powerhouse Hobbs in a singles match. So not a lot to talk about for those quite yet. I anticipate next week when we talk about All In, we'll be able to talk about those shows as well. So really excited to do that. I have PW Torch columnist Rich Fan, who will be joining me soon. He is the co-host for the evening here on Wrestling Night in America, so excited to have him along to talk with him and help me break down the All-In show that will be coming up next Sunday. And as I mentioned, next Sunday we will be doing the post-show after All In goes off the air. And the same thing will happen the following weekend. I'm not sure yet if I'm going to do Saturday and Sunday for All Out and Payback. But after at least one of those shows, I'm not committing to anything right now, but at least after one of those shows, we will be having Wrestling Night in America going on right after that show goes off the air. And who knows, if I'm feeling froggy, we'll do Saturday and Sunday. But I'll have more information for you next Sunday after All In when we're talking about that show. So hope you'll join us then, and hope you'll join us after All Out and Payback. Big 2 weeks coming up here in wrestling with three pay-per-views. Very unusual situation that we find ourselves in, but here we are. So I think this is Rich. Let's try to bring him on. Hello, Rich. Is this you? Okay, we're still waiting on Rich to join us, though, to talk about All In here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. Just thought that might have been him. So let's start with the phones. We've got Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, here on the air on Wrestling Night in America. Sean, welcome to the show tonight.
Yeah, Greg, it's glad to be on. I wanted to, well, I guess I should say, just to joke around with you, but one of the questions I was going to kind of talk about was kind of with you and Rich, but I'll get Rich's take whenever he gets on, so that's totally fine. But it's just funny because I feel like I haven't talked to Rich on the line, and it seems like forever, because I know I did a few Raw shows when he was on, but I was like, man, it feels like it's been a long time since I've even talked with him on the phone. So I was like, man, it's kind of exciting to get to talk to him a little bit, but it's okay. It's okay, Greg. I get it. He's running late. It's okay. You got to give him a hard time whenever he gets on the line. Be like, Rich, come on, man. You got to pick it up here. You got to pick it up. We got a show to do. Greg, how are you tonight, man?
Hey, I cannot speak on that because I've been through enough technical follies on my end that I'm not one to cast aspersions when it comes to that.
No, I totally understand. But how are you, man? Are you excited about what the Jaguars could have this year? What are you thinking about them going into the last part of the preseason here?
I mean, I like what I've seen so far. You hate to make too many judgments about preseason action and all that jazz. But, yeah, certainly I think they've got a clear path to the AFC South Division Championship. Obviously, they've got to prove it in the ring, of course, on the field. You can see where my mind is at. So got to prove it on the field, but I do think they have a pretty good shot at winning the AFC South. So, yeah, looking forward to it this season. I haven't been able to say that in a long time as a Jags fan, but certainly looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, I feel the opposite with my Packers. I don't feel good about them at all, which is a lot of people that are not Packer fans would say, well, it's good for, you know, probably better for you because the Packers have been good for a long time, and they definitely have. I've been kind of spoiled, but this year I don't feel good about, not just because Aaron Rodgers is gone, but a whole lot of other things too. But I'm excited for some football season. It's here. I'm very excited about it. No, the first thing I was going to bring up, I guess going to, you know, talking about, you know, All In, which, you know, I think I've told you, I'm definitely, I mean, again, I think part of the reason why they're having such a big crowd is, you know, England was going to be hot for a show. They were going to want to be there. So I think that's part of it. But it's still good. I'm thankful that they have a big crowd and they're going to have a good, you know, people are excited about the show. I am happy about that for sure. And I haven't liked the build in a lot of ways at all, honestly. I don't like the card, honestly, in a lot of ways. I want to hear what you thought about the build-up, what you think about what they've done with the Jericho Callis. And I'm kind of with Wade on what they were talking about Wednesday. I didn't like the way they kind of got there. But I do think Jericho needs to be a face just because I think, you know, Osprey fans want to cheer him and he's done a lot for the business. And but, like, this match with Osprey, I do think it's, like, it's fine. It's a match we haven't seen before. Like, I do get all that. And it'll be cool from that perspective. But and I think Chris will have a good match because he still can have a good match. I don't think it's going to be as great as everybody thinks, as good as Will Ospreay is, and I think he's phenomenal. But I think part of the problem is, you know, they're going to be in Will's home area, and they're going to want to cheer Will. They're portraying him as a heel, you know, kind of what they've been doing with him being kind of with Callis and all this stuff. So, like, what have you liked to the build of that? And do you like the match in general? Kind of what do you think about Jericho and Ospreay?
You know, I was intrigued about Jericho joining up with Don Callis. The way they did the reveal on Dynamite, I did not like. I thought, and this is an old Wade Keller phrase, I'm not sure he used it on Wednesday on the post-show, but it felt too cute by half. Like, they just kind of, like, wanted to do something that was, you know, twists and turns, but when you kind of actually laid it out, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, I don't think. Or it just strained credulity that would happen, you know. So I was not a fan. I was not a fan of, you know, Jericho apparently being babyface, even though he was prepared to join in with Don Callis' group, unless you believed that, like, Jericho was really being a babyface because he wasn't sincere when he was pledging allegiance to Callis' groups. I mean, you really have to go in your mind, like, how many steps in front of the other was one of these guys, you know? And it just really it gets all jumbled, and I don't think it's really worth the payoff. You know, Jericho Ospreay, I think, is going to be good. We've seen Ospreay have really good matches in Japan with guys who are older than Jericho or as old as Jericho and as limited as Jericho is becoming in the ring. So I'll say that. But no, I think it'll be a good match. I don't have a lot of love for, like, the story of it or anything like that. It just feels kind of tacked on at this point. And I think there is the argument, you know, taking place at Wembley, which is Will Ospreay's backyard, could you have done something bigger with Will Ospreay? And then you kind of have the push-pull of, okay, well, you might want to put him in a major match, but the thing you have to remember is he's not an AEW wrestler. Like, so how high up on the card do you want to give Will Ospreay in terms of a spotlight match when he's really not even a member of the roster? So I think landing with Jericho makes some level of sense. I think you could have, if this is AEW's intent, you can have Will Ospreay go over Chris Jericho and send the fans home happy or whatever? And, you know, Jericho's Teflon at this point. He can afford a loss. You don't want to put Ospreay in there with, like, Adam Cole or MJF or Adam Page where, you know, the options are either Ospreay loses or, you know, AEW kind of puts their booking in a blender by having Ospreay win over guys who are at the top main event level, and then Ospreay goes away, and they can't capitalize on that. So, you know, I wish there would have been something else, but I understand why there wasn't. It's just like with a lot of the rest of the card, I think you just wish there's been more meat to the build for this match, because I think Ospreay and Jericho does have a lot of backstory to it dating back to their time in Japan. You're just not going to have a lot of time to explore that on TV because the turnaround is so quick from when the match was made.
Yeah, and that's the thing with this match too, is I think, like you said, I think Ospreay has to win because, you know, Jericho doesn't need a win over somebody like that, and I don't think it helps. And it hurts Ospreay in the time being if you are going to end up bringing him to AEW at some point full time, which I don't know if that's ever the plan. But if it is, you can't have him lose a match like that, you know, especially near his, you know, where he's from. I just don't think that would help. And but like you said, Greg, that's my problem with a lot of these matches. I just don't think the build has been good to really end. I mean, and I wanted to just ask you this real fast too, and let Rich expound on, because I haven't heard a lot of his thoughts. I've heard a couple, a little bit with him and Wade talking, but I haven't heard a lot of what he thought. I thought, going back to MJF Cole, like the main stuff with them, I've been down on it, and I still am. I'm still down on the build. I haven't liked it at all. I think it's too cute in a lot of ways, a lot of WWE. Again, you know, if you wanted, I just want them, you know, they said they wanted to be different from WWE, and they're not. They're still doing a lot of stuff that WWE would do, or some kind of things that WWE would think of doing, they're starting to do now. And they think, well, we'll be funnier. We'll make it a way where it's just, it really feels funny, and it's different and all this kind of stuff. Well, the problem with the build is the promo I did think on Dynamite was really good between the two of them. The first really good promo, you know, that's really kind of just gone to the point of, this match means something to me. I want to win the world title. I want to, you know, I just feel like they haven't had a lot of that. I just feel like it's been this thing of their so-called friendship, which to me just feels, and that's the thing to me, it feels forced. It doesn't feel real to me. I don't feel like they want to be friends. It's just like, oh, one's trying to screw the other over, and the point is, which one's going to get screwed over? And to me, if Cole screws over MJF, you know, people haven't talked about this, but Cole just turned face. He just turned face.
Yeah.
Why would he turn heel this quickly? Nobody's talking about that. Even Wade, who I love, he's never brought this up. Is Cole just turned face. He talked about how he throws up. His concussions were so bad. The fans want to get behind it, but you're going to have him turn on MJF. And at the same time, I'm just kind of talking this out with you because I'm trying to talk it out in my mind. If MJF is ultimately a babyface, I am fine with that because, again, the fans do want to cheer MJF. They do love him. They want him to be a face. And I think he'll be just as good of a face, hopefully, as he is a heel. So that would be fine. But the Cole stuff, I don't understand. But then, you know, you have the opposite. They're still there where if MJF does somehow turn on him, which I mean, I hope not, just because I think that would be so obvious and make Cole look like such a dope and such a geek, and it just doesn't help him in any way. So what have you thought, again, about what they did last week? But just overall, have you still really enjoyed the build? Where do you think they're, and ultimately, where do you think they're going in this match? And what do you think about them going for the ROH tag titles, which, I don't like that at all either. I don't think they should be wrestling in any way twice. And the ROH tag team titles just don't mean enough to have them trying to fight for them. So I don't understand that part either. What do you think about all that?
Well, the tag titles are a bit of a red herring. Something is going to happen in that match that will affect the main event title match. I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they get through that match copacetic with nothing teased or anything like that. So the tag titles are kind of a means to an end, that end being create some sort of dissension or create a story. It doesn't even have to be necessarily dissension between the two, but create a story that you pay off in the MJF versus Cole match in the main event. So, you know, that's kind of my view on that. As for the build to Cole versus MJF, I am getting a kick out of it overall. I do agree with you that I think there might be a temptation to turn Cole because, first of all, the fans are really into MJF as a babyface, more so than they're into Adam Cole as a babyface. And, you know, I was against some time ago when fans said that when the last time MJF teased turning babyface and people were saying, you know, they should keep him babyface. And I was like, no, I don't think so. I'm more on board with that now. If they turn him babyface or keep him babyface, like I'm all in with that, pun intended. The problem is, as you mentioned, Cole just turned babyface from a heel. So I think there are some logistical problems with that. I think that's kind of the temptation also because that plays against type. Right, I think most people, when this started, expected MJF to turn on Cole. And for Cole to turn on MJF would be something people didn't expect or didn't see coming or something like that. Where you could still, not the type of Vince Russo where you didn't see it coming, where it doesn't make sense and they're just doing it for shock value and just doing it to surprise you, but I think they could end up making it make sense, but you just had Adam Cole as a heel. We did see the tease of Cole turning on MJF on Dynamite, which I also didn't like. I think that made a lot less sense than MJF sort of struggling with his inner devil, you know, as he calls himself, about potentially hitting Adam Cole with the title. I didn't think it made any sense for Cole to do that, so I didn't like that. But, you know, I think overall they've been entertaining. I think they've gotten the crowd to a frenzy with their team. And I think that's not nothing. I think that is something when you've got the crowd, you know, chanting for a double clothesline spot, like in 2023. I mean, that is something. I don't think I can just write that off and say that doesn't matter or anything like that. But I think they've got to be really careful about how they do this turn because you've built up all of this. I don't even want to say goodwill, but at least entertaining television. You've built all of this up, and if you do the turn the wrong way, then I think that could leave a sour taste in people's mouth about all of the buildup. And, I mean, we're also forgetting the third option here, which is they both stay babyface. Like, they could win the ROH tag titles. They could have a really good main event match, and they could shake hands at the end.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I don't think that should be out of the question. I think that should be part of the discussion as well.
No, I mean it should. I don't know. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm willing to let, you know, I want this to play out and see where they go. Like, I want to be, you know, I'm in my head. I want to be open minded and see where they go. It just hasn't been a lot about the title and how much it means. That just to me hasn't been what it should be about when it's your world championship, when it's your main title. I just feel like that's what WWE does better than them, way better than them. They make the title feel like it's important, like it means something, the main title, not the other ones. WWE screwed those up in a lot of ways, don't get me wrong. But the main title, they make it feel important. And AEW, to me, hasn't really made it feel important, and that's where I think they're really dropping the ball. But at the same time, you know, and the other thing, too, I was going to ask you real quick was about Cole. Like, if he joins the Kingdom, like, I just don't think Roderick Strong and the other two guys, or Taven and Bender, are big enough to have them. There's too many factions in AEW already. I just think putting them in another faction, it's just another faction. Like, okay, it's fine. Like, are you with me on that? Because there's too many factions in AEW. I don't think that's going to help Cole either, putting him in another faction.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't considered that as a possible outcome of a Adam Cole heel turn. But yeah, I mean, with Roderick Strong and Taven and Bennett seemingly together based on their backstage interactions, you could imagine a scenario where Cole turns and, you know, he's been assuring Roddy that he has this under control. And so would that be a heel turn on MJF? And, you know, he pays that off to Roderick Strong. I think the tough part is, you know, you got Taven and Bennett who are ROH wrestlers. You know, Cole is obviously an AEW wrestler. He's a main eventer. So are you now going to have Bennett and Taven on AEW television more often? Are you going to have Adam Cole on ROH television more often? How is that dynamic going to work. And I think you're right. I think, you know, potentially you could see this as, well, you know, having Taven and Bennett hang around, Adam Cole is going to lift their profile. I think the opposite could be true, where Cole hanging around with these guys who are ROH mainstays that are all of a sudden showing up on AEW TV, I think that could potentially lower his profile, which is not something you want to mess with right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so the last point I wanted to, or thing I wanted to really get into you with and let you talk to Rich about it. And Rich, I'm excited to hear you on, man, whenever you get on. Just going back to the women again, because again, I want to kind of talk this through with you, because I think the women can be in a good spot in AEW because there's people that are injured that are going to really help boost the division again with, obviously when Jamie Hayter comes back and you have Thunder Rosa on Collision, whenever she comes back on Collision, I feel like the women's division could be in a better spot at that time. But I just feel like right now the women are just in a really bad spot in AEW. I just, the build to this four-way match has been just awful in my, Greg, I think it's been awful. You have this tournament, which nobody cares about because you know who's going to win every match. You know going into it who's going to be in the match. There's no – you're just not thinking about it at all because you know. And then with Britt, I think Britt's in a way worse place than she was a year ago. I feel like her matches have gotten bad. Her promos are just okay. They had Sheeta beat Storm. Yes, I know they were trying to do a big thing for the 200th episode of Dynamite. I get that. But there was no meaning to her winning the title at all. They've done nothing with her, really. Toni Storm's lost the title or won it in an interim way twice and lost it twice. I just feel like they're in a bad spot going into this match. And either whoever wins it, and Saraya, I think, has been in a bad spot. The Outcast thing hasn't gone well at all. I mean, Ruby Soho has been the best thing about it, I guess. But other than that, I just feel like they're in a bad place. And whoever wins the match, I don't feel like is in a good place. And I don't feel like, going back to the TBS title too, which they're not doing that on this show. I guess they're not. But it's just been even worse. They don't need a second title. The stuff with Statlander hasn't been good so far. I haven't felt compelled by her in any way. So I just want to hear what you thought about the whole women's division and kind of the build to the four-way, and then I'll let you kind of talk about that and let Rich get on. And I appreciate, Greg, all you do, man. Thanks for taking my call, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate your phone call as well. Yeah, the women's situation, I mean, part of it is whether it's a Warner directive, whether it's just AEW philosophy of just not featuring a lot of women's segments each week on Collision or Dynamite, you know, the one or two that they feature, that limits the upward mobility, that limits your storytelling options, that limits how over these women can get because they have to share a very limited screen time. And so I think that's a frustrating thing. You look at the all-in match, Hikaru Shida, Toni Storm, Saraya, Britt Baker in a four-way for the women's championship. I'm glad Sean brought up Chris Statlander because I think that's been, more than any of them, perhaps the biggest drop ball. You have her come in a big spot to get a big pop to beat Jade Cargill for the TBS title. You don't really follow up with that. Jade has been off TV since then, so she hasn't demanded a rematch. She hasn't done any of that, and I don't know if that's a Jade Cargill decision or an AEW decision. But then, you know, that could be out of AEW's control. So I'll give them a little bit of a pass for that. But then what's under their control is the booking of Chris Statlander. And they're just really, and I think Wade said this in one of his reports recently, there just really isn't a lot about Statlander's character that pops, that jumps off the page, that speaks to the viewer. And they've had opportunity since that victory to really build her into a three-dimensional character. Credit AEW, they've gotten away from the more alien type characters that she portrayed early on in her AEW run. They've made her a little more grounded, but they really haven't gone any further than that. So she's just, at this point, another wrestler carrying around a belt in AEW. And so I think that's, you know, the frustration, because a win over Jade Cargill, given her billed and given her undefeated streak should have really meant something. And unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of great follow-up to that. You look at the women's match, and you know, Sheeta's come back, and she's done okay since she's come back, but she's another who, you know, she'll come back for months at a time and then disappear for several weeks or months. So it's hard for her to get some momentum going. Toni Storm, I think, is doing great as a character. I just am not thrilled about the Outcasts as a group. And we got an email question from Azan relating to the Outcasts. I just don't – I'm not super into that group. I think, you know, they may be better individually, although it is a way to get them all TV time. I mean, if you break up these three women and have them as singles, they're going to get, you know, one third the TV time that they would be getting right now. So, and then you have Britt Baker, who is someone else who is just kind of, it feels like they're in a rut and they haven't had a lot of really good matches lately on television or on pay-per-view. So it's really, it's just been a struggle with the women's division. You know, you would have thought that getting 2 extra hours of television a week in Collision would have alleviated some of the booking problems that we've seen with the women in the last several months or years. But it just, it doesn't seem to be the case for whatever reason. It just continues on forward. So this is going to be a big couple weeks, I think, with All In and All Out. And I think after that, you know, we've had a lot of rapid fire here. We've had Forbidden Door. We've had All In now. We've got All Out. I think after All Out is an opportunity for them to kind of do a booking reset and hopefully take a lay of the land. And hopefully that includes really taking a critical eye and a critical look at the women's division. And I know this is something that, you know, fans have been clamoring for, you know, probably years now, is for AEW to do more with their women's division. And it just doesn't feel like they've taken it upon themselves to do that. But hopefully once they get past these 2 weeks, they can kind of figure out really what direction they want the women to go in. So just to reset here at the bottom of the hour, this is PWTorch.com and PWTorchDailyCast.com, Wrestling Night in America, for August 20th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, supposed to be joined here tonight by Rich Fan. I did confirm just about an hour before we went on the air with Rich that we're good to go. He gave me the thumbs up, and unfortunately, I have not heard from him since. So we hope everything is going okay with Rich, and you know, we'll stay on the line, and hopefully he'll be able to join us here sometime soon. Just checked in with him on Twitter about 10 minutes ago. Still have not heard from him. So again, hope everything is okay on his end. So until Rich gets back and we can do a real full All-In preview, we'll go back to the phones. This is DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Couple. Where do we start? Can we start at, I guess, the top 30 under 30? There was a couple people I was surprised were bottom of the list. That those people that, of course, on the top of the list I love, but at the end of the day, why was Bron Breakker almost at the end? And then Jungle Boy was almost at the end a little too, but, you know, yeah, I understand that one. But Bron Breakker, how would you see the list, and did you think it was a great list?
So I've got the list up now. You know, this was ESPN had put this out, and it caused a minor stir. Mark Ramondi, who's a very good combat sports writer for ESPN, you know, his name was in the byline for this top 30 under 30 in professional wrestling. So the top five or the top 10, MJF was number one. Hard to argue that. You know, he's 27. Rhea Ripley, number two. I think a year ago that would have been a stretch, but I think now totally get that. Austin Theory was number three. I think they, you know, this is maybe if WWE was putting this list together, it would be Austin Theory. I think if the fans were putting this list together, he would be further down the list. I think he's higher on within WWE than he is by the fan base at large. So that's going to be worth monitoring over the next year to see if WWE's push of him is more in line with how fans see him, or maybe fans begin to see him more the way WWE sees him. Number four is El Hijo del Vikingo, who's made a lot of appearances in AEW and AAA in Mexico. Dominic Mysterio, number five. Bron Breakker, number six. Carmelo Hayes, number seven. Konosuke Takeshita, number eight. Liv Morgan, number nine. Logan Paul, 10. They do have Julia from Stardom at number 11. So, you know, they do a couple other Stardom wrestlers here. They do kind of throw a bone to wrestlers in Japan and elsewhere. You know, the thing you have to keep in mind with these, I mean, these are engagement type stories. I mean, this is designed to create controversy, to create engagement on social media, online. It's designed to be shared for people to be outraged about their rankings and things like that. So as long as you go into it with the understanding that that's the point of this article is to create a little bit of controversy and create discussion out there so people, you know, shake their fist and say, I'm going to go see what they say about this, and then they get more clicks. So, look, I think that everybody's list is going to be different. So, I you know, you also have to go in with that idea that there's really no wrong answers here because everybody's view of these wrestlers is different, especially when you ask them to list 30 wrestlers. So I think, you know, they did the best that they could to attract, to list the names that would get people's attention, which is obviously a lot of WWE and AEW since they are the main players in the United States. But I think they added some legitimacy to it. They've got Jordan Grace in there, who's not affiliated with any company right now. So, you know, I hate to come down too hard on them for a list like that.
Let me ask you one thing before I go to my second question. I mean, it's funny how, like, all they bitch about was Bron Breakker was there in six compared to, like, next to Austin or on top of Austin. It was kind of funny how they were shaking their fists about that. I thought that was kind of funny.
Bron Breakker and Austin Theory are two guys who, you know, if it was my list, I'd probably have them on the list. I probably wouldn't necessarily have them in the top 10. But, again, you know, this is – there is a bias, right or wrong, toward the biggest companies. And, you know, if you're talking about the biggest stars, 30 under 30 or whatever like that, I mean, the guys and the women who have the best chance of being the biggest stars are the ones who are in the biggest companies in the world. And that's – one of them is WWE, number one, with a bullet. So, yeah, it's one of those list articles that you just kind of have to smile and nod at, you know, with an understanding of what it's all about. But yeah, go ahead with your second question for us, DJ.
My second thing is, okay, I'm so confused. Was Tony doing weed or mushrooms or acid? Was even Halloween? I am so confused. The Texas Chainsawer match, that was so bad.
Yes.
So bad. I don't know what was going
on. That seemed to be a creative misfire. There was a tie-in with a movie. We've seen WWE do that before, the Mountain Dew Pitch Black match. Who can forget? You know, and I think much of the money or all of the money that was earned in this went to the Maui relief funds to help out the people who are in Maui being affected by the wildfires. I'm not saying that was a shield from criticism, but, you know, I think that if you're going to do something like this that really doesn't have a lot of redeeming value to this viewer anyway, I think that the fact that you couch it in, well, the money from it went toward charity, you know, okay. I'm a little more amenable to sitting through something like that if it's for charity. That being said, taken in a vacuum on its own, AEW has done things like this, not this extreme, but they've done things like this that maybe didn't look great on paper, and they've had a degree of success with them, especially stuff involving Jeff Jarrett. You know, Jeff Jarrett is kind of this, you know, he's been a lot of fun in AEW, and some of the stuff he's done has that old school Memphis vibe to it that people like these days. I think that might have been the intent of this, but I think it got a little too far out of control and devolved into something that wasn't entertaining on any degree. So, you know, it was a misfire for sure. Like, I'm not defending the segment itself, and the fact that it was on a show that has been largely panned critically makes it stand out all the more. But yeah, this was no good as an event. Again, the only redeeming value is that the money from the tie-in went to charity.
Oh wait, it gets better. So then Sting comes out with all of a sudden out of the blue for no reason at all. Casket match, okay, buddy. Then okay. So then I was like, okay, whatever. Then it gets better when Adam, the page is like, I'm at the hospital. I'm drinking a beer. What? Okay, buddy. Then I'm so confused when all of a sudden somebody just comes out of the blue and says, Stampede, who's he talking to? There's people everywhere, in the ring, out of the ring. What are you saying, dude? Who are you saying Stampede to? Like, this thing is everywhere, the Jericho thing. And then the Kenny Omega thing, like, hey, the dude stabbed you in the head with a screwdriver. Yeah, it's okay. I don't care. I forgive. Like, what? I don't know what is going on with Tony on that episode. It was crazy. I don't get it.
Yeah, look, I mentioned it was not a good episode, and I think, DJ, you laid out all of the reasons it was not a good episode. I think it was, you know, the spotlight is on AEW right now because of All In and the high expectations for doing a Wembley Stadium show where you've got 80,846 tickets out as of a day ago, you know, approaching 81,000 probably if it hasn't surpassed it already. So fans are expecting a major show, and with a major show comes a lot of hype and a lot of buildup. And I think the hype and the buildup for that show has disappointed a lot of people to this point. So I think people went in thinking, okay, you know, we're two dynamites away from this Wembley Stadium show. At this point, they've really got to do something, right? They've got to have some kind of build to it. And then they go and, you know, crap the bed with that kind of episode. So, yeah, look, I'm with you. I don't think it was a good episode. I'm not here to defend any of the stuff that you brought up. It is frustrating. To be honest, I didn't think Collision was a whole lot better. Collision was kind of paced like an episode of WWF Superstars where you had a couple key matches and a couple squashes, and it's like, really, that's it when All In is a week away? But, you know, that's the direction they went. So.
The kangaroos fight, like, it was crazy. I don't know. Something's wrong. It's just like, I don't know if he ran out of ideas or what. It's just like, but that was kind of crazy, like, on his end. Like, yeah. He really needs to have somebody else help book, and whoever is helping him is not worth helping. Like, he needs to, you know what I'm saying? Something's wrong.
No. All right, so DJ, anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, my last thing is, okay, I'll this is a, you know, nice soft one at the end. The Edge thing. He's like, oh, I'm going to do this in, you know, Canada, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But then Jim Ross said his name.
Mm-hmm.
Just straight out just said his name, yeah, whatever. I feel like he might go over there. I really feel like he would be great over there. Like, I don't know if he would just do something with Christian, but he could be champion, or he could maybe break up the stupid black party that is getting horrible too, stealing everything. I don't know, but maybe in general, like, maybe do you think he'll end his career there? I mean, he'll be decent there. He's not a bad, he's still in good shape, and he still can work a little. I mean, at the end of the day, they're not really doing anything, and they're really stuck there. So what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, DJ, for the phone call. And to help me answer this, we do have PW Torch columnist Rich Fan with us. Rich has regained power, and so he's with us here on Wrestling Night in America. Rich, crazy storm? What's going on over there?
Oh, no, we have, unfortunately, about half hour north of me, we had, it is in the news, if you all look it up, we had a house blow up with gas leaks because there's, like, mining country. And random power outage. Yeah, it's nuts. My football team actually played the team that was affected, Plum, here in Pittsburgh by that. And so I don't know if it was that or sometimes with the heat, because it was like 93 about an hour ago, things kind of go sideways. But like when I'm getting ready, I was just texting Sean Radek. Like right when I get ready, it felt like an EMP hit my house in terms of like everything going out. And just like, ugh.
Gosh, well, I'm glad everything hopefully is okay on your end, and thank you for hopping on with us here on Wrestling Night in America. But to kind of throw you right into the fire here, DJ asked about Edge, who wrestled what is basically being billed as his final match in WWE against Sheamus on SmackDown. I think it was really one of Edge's better matches since he's been back in WWE. He seemed maybe motivated in a way that he hadn't been in some of the other matches, maybe because there was some creative issues behind them. I don't know. But, you know, Jim Ross mentioning Edge in Christian's match on Collision, mentioned, you know, signing both of them when he was in WWE. So the big question now with Edge's future up in the air, is it retirement? Does he go to AEW to do something with Christian, or does he end up re-signing with WWE at some point, do you think?
Well, I know Mike Johnson and the fine folks at Pro Wrestling Insider reported that his contract expires at the end of September. So All Out is probably out of the question, I think, given his relationship. And as you mentioned, I think when you look at Jim Ross and you look at those guys from that generation, there's an affinity for him almost in a, not necessarily just a boss way, because think about it. And if you ever get a chance, I'd ask any of the folks who are listening right now, the old, I want to say Talk is Jericho, as well as Edge and Christian's podcast, if someone can like dig it up, because I know they kind of did a good job when they both got signed again to kind of like let that sucker die. Jim was instrumental in not only them developing, but treating them like human beings. Hey, go out and work the indies. Go out. Let me pay your loans for college and just focus on getting better. And when it's time to call you up, kid, I'll do it. That's not necessarily something we see now or something we saw a lot then. And so if he does have the opportunity, if anything, Tony Khan should plumb that connection and bring him in. You know, when we last heard them, they both were offered, and Edge decided to go with WWE. Christian went with AEW. Christian didn't really get offered because they let him do the spot in the Rumble and never gave him a contract. Edge, if he did get a chance, I know the caller mentioned the House of Black and kind of tearing them up. I think if they can keep it organizationally sound in terms of booking, he should go right to the main event. And that's a guy you can sell tickets, who will be a star for you and probably can give you a solid 2 years. My only caveat to that is how many of those main eventers they currently have under contract are in the "we'll give you another 2 years" category, and is that a maximizing of the time you have for the folks underneath?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be, you know, I think people were excited to see Edge in WWE again. I think there was some good that came out of it, but I think ultimately the feeling is of, to a certain extent, disappointment. You know, he was involved in that, I think it was Randy Orton, that WrestleMania match that just dragged on, and then he was involved in the Judgment Day back when it wasn't any good. Now, you know, without Edge, all of a sudden it's good now. So, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of the memories we have of Edge in WWE since his return are not all that great. And I think there's just more interesting stuff for him to do in AEW, especially being able to draw on that relationship with Christian, but in a different setting, so it feels a little different.
Yeah, and you also have the Canadian tie-in with Omega. You have Jericho, of course, Callis, of course. You know, you could have those lines, you know, last time I saw you, you were running around with some oddities. You know, they could really plumb a lot of the depths of the relationship between all the Canadian contingent that's been pretty much veterans to the scene. And then also, I think him as an established name, I'd love to see him and Darby Allin. I think that'd be a crazy match. I'd love to see him and Swerve, or him and I think an Adam Copeland, or, you know, would he, that'd be my question to you, Greg. Would he go with Sexton Hardcash, or would he go hard Adam Copeland?
I think hopefully the days of Sexton Hardcastle are over. That was definitely like a 1990s independent wrestling name. I don't think it fits major stage 2023. So I think Adam Copeland is much better. You can chant it, Adam Copeland. I mean, that's one of the big things when you pick a name, is it's got to be chantable. So I think Adam Copeland fits so much better. I think Sexton Hardcastle is best left in the 90s.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I feel like there's a world where we had that sliding door and he makes that decision. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to do it. Finally, I'm going to be Sexton Hardcastle, live again. But no. Tongue out of my cheek. I think he would be a really good get for AEW. And if he wanted to be a guy on Dynamite, if he wanted to be a Collider, whatever, bottom line, get the talent. And if people start to complain, I mean, that's the part of when you're a big show and a number two wrestling show in North America, you got to, you know, strike while the iron's hot with some of these talents if they come free.
And I think we're long past the stage, too, that Tony Khan was once criticized for lapping up all of WWE's rejects or the guys who WWE didn't re-sign. And, you know, he was signing guys at a rapid rate that had come from WWE. I think we're far enough removed from that era of AEW to where I don't think you're going to get a lot of pushback from fans of saying, oh, you know, here comes another WWE guy coming to AEW. I don't really think that's as relevant a complaint now as it was at one time.
Yeah, and if there is going to be, at this point, with people kind of putting their stakes in the ground, if there were folks that did overly complain, there may be either, not necessarily an agenda, because I don't want to be too hard on folks because their opinions are their own, but, there, you know, at times there have been folks that are colored more toward WWE and folks that are colored more to AEW. There may be folks on the AEW side saying, why do we have another one of those guys? And the folks on the WWE side saying, hey, they took one of our guys. Where at the end of the day, having an environment where people jump, I mean, that's one of the main reasons I tell that to Wade all the time. One of the main reasons I love Sean Waltman is because he was so instrumental on both sides of the Monday Night War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for sure, with Sean especially, definitely on both sides. WCW played a big role there in the NWO and in WWE as well with DX when he returned. So Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, called in a little earlier while you were in the dark, and he wanted me to pass along the message that he was sad he couldn't talk to you, but glad things are okay. So a lot of people worried about you when I said we couldn't find Rich. Rich is going to be here at some point. We just don't know when. So he passes along.
I swear I didn't go out for a gallon of milk. Yeah, this is not the gallon of milk situation. I am here. I apologize. At some point, we will ride again with another Wrestling Night in America where I show up at the beginning and have, even if I got to sit in my car with the battery running, you know, get that going.
No worries. You know, missing 30 minutes of Rich is still better than no Rich at all. So that's my take on it. You know, you're here to help me preview. Okay. you're here with me to preview All In. So let's get into it. We've talked about a couple of the matches already with callers, but just kind of running down the card here, the pre-show match. I usually don't talk about pre-show matches here on Wrestling Night in America because there's usually so much else to cover that's so much more important. But this is one of those rare times where we've got to talk about this, Rich, because this is going to have an effect on the main event of All In. It is Aussie Open taking their ROH tag titles and defending them against MJF and Adam Cole. And there's seems to be a lot of, maybe not hand-wringing, but a lot of questions, and I think Sean brought this up as well. You know, it seems small time for MJF and Adam Cole to go after the ROH tag titles. you know, and my thought was, and I told this to Sean earlier, is that, you know, the ROH tag titles are a red herring. Those don't matter. What matters is something is going to happen in this match that has an effect on the main event. I can't tell you what that's going to be. I can't tell you if it's going to be a tease of dissension from one side or the other, if it's going to be a full turn of one side or the other, if it's going to be nothing. But something in this match will play into MJF versus Adam Cole in the main event. It's not about the ROH tag titles. It's not about Aussie Open. It's about that interpersonal dynamic between MJF and Adam Cole that we're going to see in that preview pre-show match.
Yeah, I agree. I look at this match as an invitation to, if not, as you mentioned, have a turn. I think there's an opportunity during the tag match for one of the guys to get injured or for a tag not to be made in a timely fashion to prevent said injury, and then that affect what happens in the main event, be it a trick knee, you know, the usual pro wrestling. So, and I think Aussie Open gets there, you know, moment in the sun as folks who kind of, I mentioned this with Will Cooling yesterday, I believe. You know, actually, he mentioned to me, I got to give Will full credit, there isn't the typical we're in another country, we're going to bring in a couple of the stars of that region to kind of, you know, gem up the card. So this is it. Like, Aussie Open is another, is a team that wrestled in New Japan, wrestled in the UK scene. They'll be seen as like, hey, welcome back. Not necessarily faithful sons like, say, Soraya or a citizen like, I didn't realize that Toni Storm has, like, residency status, so that until she did her promo, so that's also a nice little element. So I think this will be fun to present them. They get a little attaboy, and MJF and Cole get their dissension.
Yeah, I think so as well. Just not sure what it is, and I think that's the draw. Like, you know something's going to happen, you just don't know what it is, so we'll have to tune in to find out. Next match we'll talk about is Darby Allin and Sting versus A.R. Fox and Swerve Strickland in a coffin match. Nick Wayne and his relationship with Darby Allin, as well as Swerve Strickland, has played a big part in this match. Do you anticipate him, you know, being in the corner of Darby Allin and Sting or coming in to help them out? I mean, it feels like he's played too big of a part in this to not play a part in the match at Wembley.
I think there's a possibility, but I don't know based on his age and how that works with international travel. Because I know, you know, they were waiting for him to be outside of high school, graduate high school, and age a majority for him to be able to travel and not just be, you know, an intern, whatever they gave him for the special contract he had until he was old enough to sign a full-fledged one and his mom gave permission. If he's able to show up and legally that isn't an issue, I like it. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, what do you make of the Darby Allin and Sting relationship and how it's evolved? I love the complexities of that relationship that we've seen develop over time, where Sting is this gunslinger out on one last ride and Darby Allin is this brooding, you know, he doesn't trust anyone, but he has this, you know, somewhat strange bond with Sting because they're both very similar dark characters and things like that. You know, this is one of the relationships that I love the long-term storytelling of it. And I love the depth that they've experienced and the story that they've told with these two.
Yeah, it and he mentioned it several feuds ago where Darby talked about that they're equals. Sting doesn't see him as a little buddy. I think what may have been that in the early stages of their relationship has now evolved into both of them being, you know, quality wrestlers, one a legend, one more moving up the card as he develops. I think it's a great one. I'm surprised, honestly, that for Wembley, Sting didn't have a singles match. But given the injuries that occurred in the prior, not garbage, but the gimmick matches they had, I can see why they were a little reticent to do it. This tag match, I think Swerve and AR, great team, great pair, great tandem. I also would recommend, if I always ring this bell wherever I'm at, if you get a chance, watch their Fog of War match from Lucha Underground, which I agree. Not that I always agree, but I think Brian Alvarez said it was the bloodiest match he's ever seen on television. And until AEW came along, I will heartily agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, A.R. Fox is a guy who I just never understood how he didn't get a shot on a national level outside of Lucha Underground. I think he did. He may have done some stuff with ROH. I'm not really sure, although I don't know how national you want to count that. I mean, they have had syndication,
right,
and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, whenever I watched him, like, he was just so unique. And so I'm really glad that he's got a role in AEW at this point, even though it took longer than I wish it would have. And I think this teaming with Swerve Strickland, I think it's a good tandem. I really like the idea of these two working together.
Yeah, and those guys can be dastardly, and I think Prince Nana fits as well in his own way, and I think the Mobile Embassy has been a really good thing for Swerve. My hope is that after Wembley, they don't drop the ball and they just don't use it as just a vehicle for the ascension of Nick Wayne.
Mm-hmm. So next matchup that we'll talk about is the women's four-way, Hikaru Shida, Toni Storm, Saraya, Britt Baker for the women's title. We did talk a little bit about this with Sean. I want to go to our email. We got an email from Azan. He asks three questions, but I'll split it up into sections based on where we are in the preview. But he does ask a question about the Outcast group. He says, "Hello, Greg and Rich. I think it All In would be the right time to end the Outcast storyline since it's Saraya's hometown and Toni Storm has a new gimmick that doesn't need or match well with what the Outcast act is." So I'm loving what Toni Storm is doing. Like, each week she adds something a little different to the presentation that I think just works. And so I want to give her props for that. But do you see the Outcasts as a group ending, or do you think they should end for the reasons that Azan brought up in his email?
I'm in two minds, honestly. I think Toni has done a great job as she's evolving. I love the hair, the two little tails, it's one of those things where she has a serious look on. It's like Jericho's old ploof he would have, where it would be like he'd just be super serious and he'd have that top bun and it'd just fall into his face and he'd bolt. That's her. She has that. She can go to the Marilyn Monroe hair. She has so many different things she does from a stylistic standpoint that I love. With both of them in it, if anything, I don't think Saraya is in a position with this show and with her neck and the limited amount of time she wrestles, if we notice. This isn't the time to make her champion and defend this sucker every week. I'm prepared for if anyone's going to win it, it's either Toni or Britt. And if it's Britt, I don't see it working out as well as I would if Toni, now with this new personality, can continue what she feels is an interrupted reign.
What is the biggest issue in your mind facing the AEW women's division right now? I had talked about earlier A lot of it is just the lack of TV time that they're getting, whether that's a Warner thing or whether that's an AEW philosophy to feature so few women's segments per show. You know, I use the example of Chris Statlander, whose win over Jade Cargill should have been an absolute launching pad for her, and she's kind of now in the same mix as all of the other women. So, I mean, what's your take as the biggest issue now facing the women's division in AEW? How do you fix what ails it at this point?
I think the biggest issue is moving toward a more robust roster where you have women that are on the developmental side. You have, just like the men, you have women that are going to be your workhorses, and then you have the folks with the personalities. Right now, you don't have enough workhorses so that the women who are strong personalities get exposed in longer matches, and then it becomes a backlash of fans feeling Toni doesn't support them. I personally feel like, given what fandom he enjoyed prior to becoming an owner, you know, you think about Ring of Honor, you think about ECW, those were not necessarily bastions of women wrestling. And so you need a base. You need, you know, I keep saying, right now as we chat, I haven't seen it yet, but thanks to Sean, I'll be reviewing it at some point this week. Impact had their Worlds Collide-ish pay-per-view, and Julia from Stardom wrestled. And I'm looking forward to watching that at some point tonight to see how she fared, where you have one of the top stars of Stardom showing up wrestling for Impact, and we have yet to see any hint that Tony wants to work with Rossi Ogawa and the sister organization of New Japan Pro Wrestling, for those of you unaware, Stardom, which most recently had, Kairi Sane as one of their members and one of their inaugural champions and coming back. And so now she's coming back, allegedly, to WWE. I think that's it. You need Tokyo Joshi Pro is great. But when you look at Stardom, that is just like if you were going to go to Japan and ally with wrestling promotion. As much as I respect Noah, All Japan, insert Big Japan, Top Japan, no, whomever. New Japan Pro Wrestling's, Zen Nihon is going to be, Shin Nihon is going to be the one you go for. Same thing with women's wrestling. I know Kenny, because of DDT's ties to Tokyo Joshi Pro, that's kind of like where their bread's buttered. I'd go after Stardom. I'd be bringing in, if people love, say, Nick Wayne, the evolution of Dominic Mysterio, they're bringing in Gravity and all these other dudes, they would lose their minds if you get to see a match with someone like a Riho and a Starlight Kid or a Statlander Starlight Kid, anyone that could be a really good base with Starlight Kid. She is one of the best junior female wrestlers, I think, going. Her personality is magnificent. And that's just right off the bat. I mean, you have Venus, which is one of their units, where you have a couple of women that are both non-native wrestlers and or English speakers that could really do a job. I think there's so many ways they can do it, but you got to be willing to do it. I don't think it's fair for Taya Valkyrie to face the sins and the brunt of an entire three-year journey or sojourn into whatever they got going. And honestly, if I'm being pragmatic and you just want to stay in the United States, it would behoove AEW, regardless of his relationship to WWE, to poach the best wrestler and their relationship with Dustin Rhodes, if we're going to be honest, to poach the best women wrestlers that Booker produces, because despite people's opinions, by our boss included, on Booker as a commentator, he is a darn good trainer and trainer of women wrestlers.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of the things that you listed, I know you're – I could feel the intensity as you spoke about Stardom, and it is something that I think more and more people are getting into. I would love to get into it. I can't find it.
Yeah.
It's around here somewhere. There's going to be some spare time, but that is something that, like, is on my to-do list, is to just, like – even just check out a few shows just to get my feet wet. And I'm really looking forward to getting an opportunity to do that. But yeah, the women's situation, it's not going to solve itself in a month or 2 months or something like that. It's going to, I think in AEW, it's going to take a philosophical change of some sort to come along to really reset the division. And as I said earlier, hopefully after All In, All Out, all of the pressure of putting on these shows back-to-back, doing one in England in front of 81,000 fans or however many it's going to be, they can kind of reset a little bit and take a look at what they've done and where they can do better. So that's the hope. Let's go back to the phones, take a pause in previewing All In, and go to Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America.
Thank you for the welcome, and it's a joy to be back on this show. I'm happy that you have Rich Fan as your co-host. How are you, Rich?
Awesome. How about you, good sir?
Fine. It's good to hear your voice, and I second your opinion on Starlight Kid. I think she would definitely be an added attraction to AEW, and I truly feel that Tony Khan, Christopher Daniels, Madison Rain, Serena Deeb, they all need to get together and work out some sort of formula to bring more eyeballs to the women's division because the talent is there. You know, it's sad to watch. You know, it's normally around, you know, segment 9 and 10. You have your match. You know, normally it's no longer than 8 minutes in length. You know, it's one match per week, same segment. You know, they need to do something to revitalize this women's division. And like you said, Greg, earlier with Sean from Freesboro, that, you know, they've kind of run its course with Chris Statlander, you know, even at an early expiration date, because Jade Cargill will be returning sooner than later, perhaps this week. And so really, unless they're going to put the belt back on Jade, they really didn't do anything, you know, too much with Chris. You know, it's like she's constantly coming out to make the save for Willow or Sky Blue, you know. And she really hasn't done that much as a champion, Chris Statlander, that is. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Jade when she returns within the next couple of weeks. You know, will she be automatically seeking a rematch with Chris, or will they incorporate her within the other title picture with the Toni Storms and Hikaru Shidas of the world? So we will see. Now, where do you think they'll place Jade Cargill, Greg, and Rich?
Yeah, I think you've got to address the elephant in the room, which is Jade lost to Chris Statlander when she was not prepared. She had already wrestled a match and defended her title. So this is, to me, the poster child for getting a rematch. And, you know, I could see, though, Rich, I could see wanting to move Jade Cargill away from that. She spent so much time as TBS champion. It defined who she was. She's been off TV all this time. You could make the argument that it's best to bring her back going after something else, giving her, like, a complete reset, giving her a fresh start. Especially if she's not going to win the TBS title back. I don't know that you would want to get her right into that if she's not going to win it back, and I'm not saying she isn't. She might. But then again, you're at the same spot you were before where people thought she had kind of gotten a little stale as TBS champion, and people were just kind of waiting for that person who was eventually going to beat her. Do you really want to go right back to that when she returns? So I think there's an argument, Rich, for her getting a rematch, but I think there's perhaps an even better argument for her going as far away from that as you can just to kind of start fresh and start anew.
Yeah, I looked at Jade, and if you're going to have one of the – when you think about the television ratings and the amount she's drawn for them in terms of the metrics, I figured it'd be a great reward if injury or some other reason didn't preclude her from doing so to have her on that show, to have her on the Wembley show. If she's not going to be able to do that and she's going to come shortly after, you guys mentioned Willow, and I was remiss not to mention her. She is a great example of one of the people they can build around, because I see Willow as, you know, if Dr. Death also has the manic kit kindness of a pixie, you know, someone that can smile in your face as she's, like, throwing you, like, a hithering yawn around the ring.
If Dr. Death were a soft teddy bear.
Yes. Like, I think about the Family Guy meme of the teddy bear jumping back into the truck, basically Willow throwing you, like if the teddy bear just went on a murderous rampage.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think Jade is, you know, for them, Jade is one of their top stars. And, again, like I mentioned before, she is a star. Her wrestling ability working with Brian Danielson has gotten better. And my hope is that they can have three women storylines going at once without forgetting. Right now, we've yet to see that.
It's a lot to ask. That's a lot to ask.
Yes.
Yeah, I listen, I echo the love for Willow Nightingale. I think I was one of the early adopters of being a fan of her when she was in AEW. I even made the argument that I thought she should have been the one to dethrone Jade Cargill for that TBS title. So any Willow Nightingale love, I am there for. Reverend Keith, we'll go back to you for your second question or comment for us tonight.
It will be interesting. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was hoping that I wasn't sure if it was a delay on my end. Go ahead, Keith. I'm sorry.
No. Speaking of Willow Nightingale, I would like to see her become the ROH Women's Champion now. I know she had a great match with Athena, who now reluctantly, and I put emphasis on that term, reluctantly has turned babyface, and she's been teaming or will be teaming with Billy Starks on upcoming Ring of Honor television episodes. I could see them transitioning Willow to the ROH division because she's been doing double duty, and it would be nice to see her on top and maybe move Athena over to the AEW side because I could see her talent being used more widely on AEW and helping the women's division over there, especially now the babyface, you know, because when you look at it, the women's division is kind of lopsided on AEW. You've got the Outcast, and you've got all these other heels such as our Mercedes, Diamante, the list goes on and on. Some of them you never even see, like Nyla Rose. You see her once or twice a month. But if you're using Athena wisely, you could have her transition over to AEW and still keep Jade over working with Chris Statlander with the TBS title. You could move Athena over and have her help out the babyface women such as Hikaru Shida and Dr. Britt Baker, you know, on AEW. What are your thoughts on that idea?
I think if you were booking AEW's women in a more competent way, in a more well-rounded way, in a more thorough way, I think Athena would fit perfectly because I think she has done a great job as far as character work, as far as her in-ring, and you know, her basing her in-ring around her character because it's slightly different from her babyface character in terms of, you know, her in-ring work. I would be all for Athena going to AEW. My fear is that with the way that AEW books its women, Athena would fall into the same abyss that a lot of these other women fall into, where they may get a feud for 3 weeks and then they disappear for a while. They may get a squash win here or there, but don't really have a storyline, don't really have a direction. And, you know, ROH is seen by a much smaller audience than AEW, but at least she's able to do a lot better work there more consistently than I fear that she would be able to do in AEW. So Rich, I would be all for Athena moving back to AEW if AEW had books their women differently than they do now.
Yeah, and that's a tough order to ask for because we're already seeing that in real time.
Yeah. I mean,
I think Athena's a great...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I think she's a great person to have. She could be a bedrock of their roster. But right now in Ring of Honor, she's the one woman storyline machine for everything that's going wrong, you know, or going along, not going wrong. I always look at it as like the Bechdel test. How many times can you have in writing or in a character, like two women or more talking without a man being the impetus behind it? She doesn't have to worry about that. You never worry that she's just going to be kind of othered or just put to the side. But in Ring of Honor, that's a guarantee. In AEW, that's a possibility.
Yeah. All right, Reverend Keith, your last question or comment for us tonight. Hello, Reverend Keith, are you there?
Yes, I think we were muted for a moment. But no, I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Last but not least, I wanted to focus on the main event of AEW's All In. Now, it's interesting that they would book MJF and Adam Cole to wrestle on the pre-show, and I know it's to bring more eyeballs and more pay-per-view buys for the show. I do believe that Roddy Strong, Taven, and Bennett perhaps will stop MJF and Adam Cole from winning those belts. I know many people believe that the only reason why this match was booked was to give them the tag titles and something to add on to the main event, you know. However, I see it in the opposite, moving in the opposite direction. I see it as being a catalyst for the main event, for the turn of either Cole or MJF. Now, Roddy Strong, who definitely has a gripe, has a bone to pick with, an axe to grind, you know, he's always been with Adam Cole from day one. You know, I'm right here, former Sinclair guy. I know all about, you know, the Ring of Honor story. I've been in the dressing room with those guys. You know, Rich knows I've shared the story with him. So now is the time to incorporate Roddy Strong with the Adam Cole MJF storyline. Now, I do believe, as you said earlier, Greg, that to make it more intriguing, turn Adam Cole heel, have him align with Taven, Bennett, and Strong. That could end up being a swerve. Have him align with those four, because they did align together before once in Ring of Honor back in 2015. They were together in the Kingdom with Maria Kanellis Bennett. It was Cole, Taven, Bennett, and Kanellis. So I could see that happening once again. You know, have them screw MJF. Now, I do believe Aussie Open will retain those belts due to the interference. And then when main event time rolls around, somehow Adam Cole deceives MJF and he turns heel. Now, will he get the title? I doubt it. But at the same token, it's a possibility. But whatever happens, I think that there will be a rematch the following Sunday in Chicago. That's my thought. Now, give me your thoughts on my prediction. Give me your thoughts on my fantasy booking. And last but not least, I want to thank you for taking my call. It's a joy to hear your voice again, Rich. I know we'll be talking soon. Greg, have a wonderful week, and may God bless both of you.
All right. Thank you, Reverend Keith. Always appreciate the phone call. Rich, I brought this up, or Sean brought it up in an earlier call, about the potential of Adam Cole joining in with Taven, Bennett, and Strong, and how would Cole be portrayed? Would he be seen as lifting up Taven and Bennett, or would it seem like a step down for Cole to be a part of this group that is sort of relegated to ROH, aside from Roddy Strong, who hasn't done a ton of stuff in AEW? You know, I think the potential for Adam Cole to turn on MJF is real. I'm not sure if he turns, if it should be to align himself with the Kingdom. But what do you think about that and the scenario laid out by Reverend Keith?
Well, first, I think Keith had a great point. I forgot about all of the Kingdom. I remembered Haven and Ellis, but I forgot it. Roddy was there too. He's also got the Bullet Club deal, where Adam was like one of the 87 members of the Bullet Club toward the end at Ring of Honor before he left for NXT. So Adam essentially has been in every stable you can be in either of the companies or any of the companies. I think it makes more sense for those guys stay aligned on the Ring of Honor track. I think it brings Adam down a little bit. And
yeah,
similar to
that's
how they
kinda
try
how
to
I
recreate
felt.
The Undisputed. It's like, you know, as much as I enjoy him wearing the jacket, that is essentially giving him the Letterman jacket as like a 35-year-old. He's already done Undisputed Era. He's already done The Kingdom, already done Bullet Club. Let that man graduate to whatever he's going to be in this new AEW iteration.
Yeah.
And kind of go from there. That's where I'm at on Adam. And I think with Keith Spoking, my hope would be All Out is, you know, champion versus champion for the quote-unquote real world championship slash the AEW world title, but who knows, you know, how things are going to go. I think Jericho and his match with Ospreay, for instance, there isn't really a plan B after that. Like, what is he going to do the next week? But when it comes to the title matches, one would assume MJF either gets the win, or if Cole does turn on him, have that story time with Adam Cole and maybe you make All Out a three-way between MJF, Cole, and Punk.
Yeah, it does feel like that to pay off Punk's real-world title situation, it almost feels like it has to be against MJF. I mean, his whole crusade is that he never lost the title, and, you know, MJF was the one who ended up with the title. And, I mean, that was kind of the plan all along to get to MJF versus Punk. So it kind of does feel like MJF and Punk have to be in that match, whether it's one-on-one or, as you suggested, you throw Adam Cole in there and make it a three-way. But MJF, it does feel like he has a part to play in that.
Earn that, especially mm-hmm. with the return of Punk. And,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, I will be riveted, regardless on how these things go, by whatever happens in the All Out post-show media Q&A. Because if Punk gets to come out again and kind of just talk through a year later, lessons learned, I will be up as long as it takes to hear that.
No one is going to listen to this show live after All In. Everybody is going to be tuned in to the post-show to see what kind of fireworks do or do not happen. But, I get it. I understand. So that's why you send emails, wnialivecast@gmail.com, if you want to watch the All In presser right after that show and can't tune in to call in about your thoughts on All In. Rich, let's go back to the All In card here, finish things up. We have, you mentioned Will Ospreay versus Chris Jericho. That was another match I talked about with Sean earlier in the show. And it does, you know, my kind of impression was, it feels a little anticlimactic for Will Ospreay, but when you think about the fact that he's not really an AEW wrestler and you're probably not going to put him in a marquee singles match against one of their top stars and potentially have him lose at All In, where you could just very easily have Chris Jericho lose. You could have Don Callis and his guys interfere, do something to have him lose. If you want to send the crowd home happy by having Will Ospreay win, Jericho is a guy who's kind of Teflon. He can take the loss. Even though Ospreay versus Jericho does kind of feel thrown together, and this is just a, kind of an overall overarching theme with All In, where just a lot of stuff feels thrown together at the last minute for a show that you feel like AEW should have had a lot longer build toward. And I feel like Ospreay versus Jericho is sort of the poster child for that, because they are two big names. It has the potential to be a big match, and yet it was kind of made out of nowhere this past week.
It's interesting you mention that, because Jericho's last few matches and last few storylines, if I'm honest, seem kind of like out of the blue, whereas the rest of Tony's mm-hmm. booking, I very much respect, while it does get kind of thrown in the week of a lot. I think it's because he trusts the storyline on television is going to carry you there, instead of saying, hey, maybe we nudge it a little bit one way, or nudge it and give you, you know, Wade mentioned the idea, and I'm very much in agreement with this. It's not the worst idea in the world to have a few matches created. I mean, Tony already is seen as the guy that puts bigger matches together. Like, Tony's decided, as boss, as a wrestling fan, he wants to see this match. And then the story gets carried from there, as opposed to just, I don't like you, you don't like me, let's wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for Jericho and Ospreay, you're right. Could have been Omega. I thought it would be a much bigger thing on the card. But being a semi-main event or a semi-semi-main event or, you know, three main events, however they're going to politically sell, Punk, Joe, Ospreay, Jericho, and MJF Cole. I just want to see more of the week's turnaround, more of what we're going to need in terms of going forward for the fall, because they got to get that TV deal, they got to get competitive, and they're going to have to deal with the WWE is still in a pretty good hot streak.
We've got the Stadium Stampede match, Eddie Kingston, Orange Cassidy, the Best Friends, and the Lucha Brothers against the BCC and three members to be announced. I go back to Azan and his mailbag question for us. He says, how do you think AEW is going to pull off a Stadium Stampede in a post-pandemic era? And I was thinking I feel like we just had a Stadium Stampede match. Is this really the first one we've had since the pandemic era? And the last one that I was thinking of was the Anarchy in the Arena match. And I guess I see Stadium Stampede maybe playing out in a similar fashion to Anarchy in the Arena. It may be tougher because it's a lot easier to catch, you know, four different wrestlers fighting amongst 10,000 fans than it is four different wrestlers fighting amongst 80,000 fans. So that's going to put even more stress on an already struggling camera crew, camera work, and directors and things like that. But what are your expectations for this match? You know, is this going to be just kind of a wild and woolly brawl? They're going to fully use the Wembley Stadium amenities for this? How do you see this playing out?
I think they are going to use the amenities to the utmost. My one caveat is the way that Wembley's set up, the screens are kind of like at the corners. And so if you are in one of those blessed rows where you've paid a lot of money to be low, you're going to miss a lot. And so my hope is that with the creating of their stage and even with having over 80,000 people there, it's enough set up so that people, like through their tech, can still see things. Because otherwise, it's going to be, we can't see chance and things like that. And I don't want that to mar what is going to be a pretty historic night.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to be the key, and that's not something you had to worry about during the pandemic era. You hope that, I mean, I guess it's the bare minimum to hope that they account for those sort of things. That should be automatic. But I do think it does raise the question of, you know, how silly is it going to get? You know, with the BCC, you would assume very violent. But the Stadium Stampede matches have historically also had levels of comedy in them. And do you expect it to go that direction given the participants involved this year?
Absolutely. In fact, I was thinking, do some comedy based on the way, like, for instance, from experience, thanks to Will Cooling, who I do the deep dive with. Going into Wembley, I've never had this experience in any other stadium. You basically walk into, like, a turnstile, and when you get to the turnstile, you have to, like, stick your hand in. It's almost like Dune. And extend the ticket you have that's paper for the reader to read it, and then once it reads it, it'll let you click through. I'm imagining an Eric Andre-like Jericho overdone, over-the-top deal with one of those guys. Because I know Jericho could do it. Like, if Jericho was in this match, it'd be perfect. I'm trying to figure out who would be the person. Maybe Mox. Somehow get out of Wembley, and they're fighting on the stairs. So there's this huge mall that leads to Wembley Stadium. And they're fighting and brawling down the stairs, and then they try to get back in the arena, and they don't have tickets, and they can't get in. Like, the thing's just locked, and they're shaking the turnstile and losing their minds, and they have to fight a back way in. And then you can have some maybe British luminaries that kind of like when they had the Jaguar staff helping out. I think that would be really cool. But other than that, my hope is that it's early in the card because there's already, we mentioned the coffin match. We mentioned Jericho and Ospreay, which seems going to have some bells and whistles there. You know it's going to be there probably with a little bit of the other multi-man match, which we'll get to. And the women, is because it's a four-way, it's no DQ, so I'm assuming kendo sticks at all are going to pop up at some point. So this is going to be the one with all the plunder that needs to kind of like get people either fired up or it's got to be the crazy thing before you get to the main event.
Right. Yeah, I think placement on the card and just the placement of all the matches on the card is going to be really interesting. We talk a lot about that often with AEW, their choice for main event, choice for semi-main event, and things like that. This is another show where it's going to be really interesting to see where they decide to place things and how they pace the show overall as well. I think that's going to be key to keep 80,000 people engaged. Another multi-man match, Ibushi, Omega, and Adam Page against Takeshita, Juice Robinson, and Jay White. I do like the prominent positioning of Jay White and Juice Robinson. You know, they've kind of been toiling away on Collision while Omega and Page have been on Dynamite, so there's that lack of crossover that's kind of hurt the build, I think, so far. What's your take on the multi-man matches? Only a few singles matches on this show. Would you prefer to see guys like Adam Page and Kenny Omega and, you know, maybe Jon Moxley in singles matches? Or is this just kind of, there's madness behind this, for the method behind the madness is you've got another show a week later at All Out, and maybe that's where you kind of peel back these multi-man matches and pull out singles matches out of them to have it All Out?
I would say, especially considering he's one of the executive VPs, Omega needed, in my opinion, a singles match. We didn't get that. We got the Golden Elite. And this is like a very another Golden Elite that I don't think we've even seen before, because technically the last time we saw Golden Elite, it would have been the 10-man tag of Kenny, the Bucks, Cody, and Ibushi, if I remember correctly. But that's me being a faction nerd. So Hangman, I get it, you know. But him in the singles, I don't think is as important right now, because he's not necessarily in the title scene. Omega, definitely. And, you know, from some of the reports, it would have been him and Danielson. And because of injury, that kind of precluded it. Makes sense, mm-hmm. Understood, but you literally had that exact amount of time to find another way into this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the frustrating thing. Any of those scenarios that you bring up that, well, they couldn't do it because of this, the answer is always, but you had time. You had time to figure out an alternative, and they didn't. or the alternative was, let's do another multi-man match, which I get people being frustrated with. The real world's title is on the line, and I'm not talking Ric Flair's NWA title, but it is CM Punk versus Samoa Joe for the real world's championship. We talked a little bit about this earlier, but I think, you know, Punk Joe has a lot to draw on. What did you think of the angle this past week on Collision where Punk, at first I thought he was a conquistador, but I didn't know if AEW had the intellectual property rights to that character. And then I was like, I don't even know if that's like a character you could even get intellectual property rights for. It's just so generic. And by the time I like thought that through, Punk had already unmasked. So I just kind of like, eh, who cares? But Punk pretending to be a masked jobber opponent of Samoa Joe's. And really that was it. I mean, that was it for this episode of Collision. I expect more of a hard sell next week, but what do you think about Punk Joe? Obviously a lot of history behind it. And then the angle this past week from Collision.
I liked it. I was very confused by it as well, but I do think that Punk and Joe will have a great match. This is, again, that thing that tickles the back of Tony's brain in terms of he's going to have a Ring of Honor legacy match as one of his co-main events. Mm-hmm. That is something he can never have taken away from him with this show.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's cool the lineage and the history you can draw from. How do you think AEW is done with that? I mean, have they done, and granted, there's still another week left, so they could do a Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler style video package on Collision for this, but do you think they've taken full advantage of that history between Punk and Joe in the lead up to this so far?
I don't think so. And part of that is because of it being solely or mainly a Collision storyline. There needs mm-hmm. to be more integration with that and more like with the video lead-ins, more sit-downs, more things that bleed over from one show to the other when given permission by the people running those shows, I guess. He says, realizing that some people can't show up.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting with this pay-per-view because that is going to be the big question. Are you prepared for the chaos of everything backstage? And so I don't begrudge Tony with everything going on because of that.
And that leads us into FTR, Young Bucks, AEW tag titles, if this takes place. Obviously, one of the big stories of the week was the situation that was broken about Cash Wheeler, who was arrested Friday morning in Orlando, who was being charged with one count of aggravated assault with a firearm for what appeared to be a road rage incident. You know, with this, with the CM Punk stuff, with everything else going on, you know, just kind of taking a step back at the larger picture of AEW right now, because, you know, FTR versus the Young Bucks is if it happens, it's going to be what it is. You know, it's going to be a great match. It's going to be these two teams wanting to go out and set the building on fire, metaphorically speaking, in terms of just having a great match. That's what they do. That's who they are. There's really not a lot more to it than that. So I don't know that there's a lot more to dig into it. But this is an opportunity for us to kind of take a step back and say, you know, CM Punk was in the news, the wrestling news, for, you know, kicking people out of Collision or not letting people backstage. You have Cash Wheeler, who was arrested on Friday morning. You have, you know, just the general malaise that people have felt going into this All In. You had what was seemingly universally panned as a very bad episode of Dynamite on Wednesday. And then you have 81,000 who are going to be in Wembley Stadium. So it's like, this is like, AEW's going to have the biggest show of all time, potentially, certainly their biggest show ever, and it just feels like everything that can go wrong will go wrong. I mean, how much of this, I guess, is Tony Khan and AEW to blame for this stuff, and how much of it is just like you just have to shrug your shoulders and say, we just got to get through it?
It is. A lot of it is because you have the history on your side, and you also have another pay-per-view a week later. So it is, you know, full steam ahead, and you have, you know, the transfer window for Fulham, and you have the end of preseason for Jacksonville, and you have life. Tony just has to keep it moving. I think as I've continued to bang the drum and ring the gong, as long as the folks around him can support him, this works. When they don't, it's one-man show, and right now I feel like a lot of this had to be a one-man show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you almost wonder what's going to happen next week. You know, how much worse can this possibly get? Obviously, you hope that they're able to build a modicum of momentum heading into All In, because there are a lot of good people who work in AEW, and you want them to enjoy the success that they've helped create in Wembley Stadium's All In and packing over 80,000 into this stadium. And it kind of feels like, yes, some of it is out of their control, but some of it is just like, it does feel like they can't get out of their own way, whether it's booking wise, whether it's, you know, decision-making. You know, you have Tony Khan ceding all this authority to CM Punk. You have Cash Wheeler, who this incident happened earlier this month and we're just finding out about it now. Did AEW know about it? If not, why not? Like, then you have this picture of Tony Khan as this super fan who kind of wants to be buddies with everybody, and then we're seeing what happens when you don't run a tighter ship. How much of this really is Tony Khan not running a tighter ship and not having strong leaders that he can lean on? I know Wade Keller has said, you know, he needs a bad guy. He needs a Jim Ross. He needs a J.J. Dillon who can, you know, take the fall in for decisions that he makes. And he doesn't really have that right now.
Yeah, and until he gets that, it's going to be him just dealing with all this stuff. And I was hoping that there would be, especially with the re-signing of the Elite, more than just, hey, we're glad we're going to get paid that stupid amount of money. We're really looking to dig in and kind of lead. But alas.
Yeah.
I can wish in one hand and blank in the other.
Yeah, I guess I'm surprised that there, you know, and who knows? Maybe it'll come out that there was, maybe it'll come out that things have changed. But, you know, if I'm Tony Khan sitting down and negotiating deals with these guys, like, I would want, this is a time to kind of reflect back on what worked putting these guys in EVP positions, what didn't, and then kind of making a plan of what you want out of their positions, what Omega and the Bucks see their positions as, and really getting a chance to come together as management to say, let's formulate a plan of what this position is going to be, what it's going to look like, what your roles and responsibilities are going to be going forward. You know, contract negotiation time is the time to get all that done. And granted, it just happened, so we may not see the effects of that right away, but hopefully that was a real conversation, a real heart-to-heart that happened when they sat down to negotiate. And it wasn't, as you just said, you know, from the Young Bucks perspective or Omega's perspective, yeah, sign me up for getting paid again for doing this gig.
And there has to be kind of a reckoning for that at some point, because
yeah,
Tony is paying and giving insurance and doing these things that wrestlers don't typically get for the ability for you to assist in these jobs. And it can't just be the video game. Like, hey, I'm really happy with the way that they released the game and all of the accolades they've gotten. But one of the biggest points of feedback I've seen and read online about it is, and even heard from folks who don't necessarily watch AEW regularly but like wrestling video games, why aren't there every wrestler? Like, what if this is going to be a more Aki engine, simpler design graphically, can't you have full entrances? Why is it only 7 seconds? Like, even think back to the worst WWE game you ever had. You could listen. That's still a yearly thing for me when I get a game. Like, hey, let me just start some of my favorite entrances and see how they look. And it's like, by the time you get into it, it's like zero, and they're in the ring. That's a BP thing. That's a lot of money Tony invested. He even said at the time, they could have made a profit that first year, but they poured what would have been the profit into the video game. Seems like they got a positive result, but it can't just be being interested, as in most things in life. You can't just be an exec or a leader at times where it's convenient. It also has to be for the things you don't necessarily want to do.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully that was a conversation that was had, because you don't want to throw the kind of money at these guys that Tony Khan likely had to bring them back, and then not have that conversation with them and not set out your expectations or how you would like things to be done differently. Which I think, you know, from the outside looking in, I think things should be done differently as far as their positions, what their roles are, and what responsibilities they might have. Last match here, and then we'll wrap things up. MJF versus Adam Cole. Really, as we said, a lot of it depends on what happens in the Aussie Open MJF Cole ROH tag title match that opens the show. You know, this will be the main event. Probably Punk versus MJF, potentially versus Adam Cole at All Out a week later. What is your, I guess, preference, Rich? I've kind of laid out what I would like to see happen earlier. But, you know, there are really three options here. There's MJF turns, there's Adam Cole turns, and there's nobody turns. And they have a good match, and they shake hands afterwards, which I think is probably the least likely scenario to come out of this match. But, you know, what is your preference? I know there's a push to have MJF stay babyface. I know there's a lot of people who say just he's such a good heel, and it goes against everything that he has stood for to this point. What would be your preference coming out of this match?
I would say it would be that Adam Cole loses, they stay friends, and he turns on him after they do their hug. MJF does.
Mm.
Because Cole, I see with the counterintuitive, like, make Cole the guy that's turning, and then, but I don't think that the biggest pushback I have is MJF doesn't want to be a face.
Yeah.
He likes doing kind of like the passive. Like, this is the third or fourth time he's done this where he's proven, hey, if I really wanted to be the baby face that still is the insult comic to the fans, they'll love me for it, and then leaned even heavier into being a heel.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Cole thing, too, is it's people who try to overthink it and say, well, we've built up a scenario, especially with the tease this past week on Dynamite, we've built up a scenario where Adam Cole has a reason for turning heel. I mean, you could understand him turning heel. So it's not the Vince Russo swerve for the sake of a swerve. It is a swerve, but they could sort of knit it together and make it make sense. And then, you know, the other problem with that is Adam Cole was just a heel. And so he's turned babyface, and now he's turning back heel. And I'm not sure that's really the kind of turns that you want to have happen.
Yeah, it's the Paul White school of character development.
Yes, absolutely. At least show Paul White backstage, like, rubbing his chin with his fingers watching it, if it does happen that way, contemplatively or something like that. Yeah.
Or it's been, like, X number of days before another MJF turn.
Yes.
Like one of those industrial accident signs.
Oh, man. So All In, again, I'll be on the air here on PWTorchDailyCast.com after All In goes off the air next week. Rich, I'm glad you could make it. I'm glad you're no longer in the dark. Before we let you go, I'm sure people who are listening know of your work on the Torch, but go ahead and plug your social media and what you do for the Torch.
Yeah, sure. So I write a column in the Torch. I try to do it at least once a month, but it's been about every 6 weeks the last few months with the way life has been treating me. You can always find me on Twitter at @rich_fan, as long as that site remains. You can also find me on Threads, @rich_fan_, because somehow I yet again was beaten out to my own name. I do several podcasts here at the Torch, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan, and now it's Rich Fan and Will Coolin. I've been doing everything with Rich and Wade. Is one of the shows you hear every week. Wade and I have been having a ball doing that. My home base and my origin, much like here, chatting with you on the old blog talk, was starting with Travis Bryan over at East Coast Cast, and we will be ending our summer hiatus sooner rather than later. And, of course, outside of the Torch, you can probably see me on several other friends' things, most notably over at Post Wrestling. I've been the stand-in host and kind of the batter right off the bench for MCU Later, which is Post Wrestling's coverage of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Awesome. Rich Fan, Torch columnist, thank you so much for joining me for this momentous preview of a momentous show, All In, next weekend. Hope to have you on again soon, Rich. Thank you, and take care.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, when you're watching All In next weekend, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. You can email your thoughts. We'll read them right on the air and talk about them. Or you can call us, 515-605-9345. We'll be on the air again next Sunday. You can find me on social media at Greg M. Parks. I'll see you next week, 1 week from today, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.